worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
You're being a wah-wah, Mrs. Torres.
Oh, yeah, we had to get some giggles out. If we're going into this episode, for our batch recording today, this will be the heaviest one. Oh, okay. Yeah, it was rough writing it. Okay. Now that we've been giggly, because the rest of our batch is going to be giggly, so listeners, please forgive us. We're going to do the serious bit on the front end. Get it out of the system so that we can go back to being giggly.
Business in the front.
Business in the front. The mullet set, if you will.
Yeah, the mullet set, yep.
So, without further ado, what is up, looky-loos? Freaky friends, deadly darlings, macabre hotties, listeners, welcome and hello. We're doing it backwards this morning to Macabre, a dark history podcast. I'm Blair.
I'm Holly.
If you're new here, hi. We are very happy that you came to hang out with us today and join us as we try to entertain you for this hour-ish of content. So hopefully we bring that entertainment of the hour to you. Remember that this show is not for the faint of heart, and negative energy is definitely not allowed. This is a darker episode, so trigger warning, we're going to be touching on some historical cringies in our hometown macabre episode today. But before that, a little bit of housekeeping here on the front end, like I said, mulleting. If you want a little more from us, we are on Patreon, where you can listen early and ad-free to all of our content. And you can see our faces over there, which for the next couple that we record today might be worth it, because it's just going to be a giggly mess. We also have a private Facebook group where you can hang out with more of our cool-ass listeners. So go on over there and join the fam. You will not be disappointed. And if you like what you're hearing, please leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. We would really appreciate it. Tell a friend. Mention it awkwardly in a quiet elevator. Shout it out of your open window while you're waiting in rush hour traffic. Whatever brings you joy, spread the word. Today, we are covering another hometown macabre for you. And this week's topic has been a long time coming. And I mean, like, season one long time coming. We've mentioned it here and there, and finally it is time to do the deed. And not in that way, but maybe kind of after we talk about what we're going to talk about. This topic is an appalling segment of American history, so buckle up. Trigger warning right here. It's going to be blood boiling and all around very upsetting. Today, we are going to take you to Tuskegee, Alabama. Here are my hype notes. I'm just going into it. In America, healthcare is a touchy subject, and as we record this, there's a lot of touchy subjects in America right now. We won't get into those today. In the 1900s, it was also cringe back then.
Not much has changed.
No, exactly. Deception and false promises weren't the only things the Tuskegee community were getting from their local clinic, but join us today as we talk about a very shameful subject in America's history. Let's do this thing. We can't go forward without talking about Tuskegee, of course. Tuskegee was founded by Creek War veteran General Thomas Simpson Woodward in 1833. That is a mouthful. I had to practice that name without going.
You did a great job.
Thank you. Tuskegee is a variation of a nearby village called Tuskegee. So, also practice that one. We're trying real hard not to fuck up any pronunciations today. According to 19... Oh, yeah, here we go. I can say the names, but I can't say the rest. According to the 2023 census, the population is just over 8,700 today.
Okay.
So
small.
Yeah, pretty small. But the town is, it's made a major impact in American history in different ways. And we'll kind of build some of that up in the Macabre Morsel area to try to at least give some credit to the community there after all of this came through, because holy shit, people. Tuskegee is most well known for the Tuskegee University, which was established in 1881. When it started, it was a campus that trained African-American teachers, and it specialized in that. In fact, Booker T. Washington was the developer of the school when it was known as Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute.
Very cool.
It's so cool. If you don't know who Booker T. Washington is, really do some research on him and read a few books. He was an incredible person. If you don't know who he was an American educator who was a very influential spokesperson for Black Americans between 1895 and 1915. He has an amazing track record. He did so much for education in this country. In 1881, he was actually selected to establish the Tuskegee School, and it was a major part of his life's work. And when he started, it was only two small converted buildings without any equipment and like barely any money to fund anything.
Go figure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're like, oh, hey, here you go. But here you go. That's what we've got. It's like, really?
Figure it out. Yeah.
Right. Booker figured it out. He transformed the place, I mean, into something that they would have never recognized in the beginning. According to Britannica, when Washington passed away 34 years later, the Institute had developed into, quote, more than 100 well-equipped buildings.
Wow.
Some, yeah. Some 1,500 students, a faculty of nearly 200 teaching and 38 trades and professions, and an endowment of approximately $2 million.
Yeah, that's massive.
Yeah, like standing ovation. Like he really transformed that school into something amazing. So yay for Booker T. Washington. We're going to give kudos here because it's going to get really, really weird. Another thing to really set Tuskegee apart in a positive light is they're also known for the Tuskegee Airmen.
Oh, yeah.
And they were a group of dedicated young men who became America's first African-American military airmen. They were in charge of escorting bombers during World War II, and they had the lowest loss rate of all escort fighter groups.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is kudos too, because in that line of work, yeah. Tuskegee has been involved with some pretty, of course, as we've mentioned, pivotal points in history, ones that are good and amazing and transitional and incredibly proud moments. But unfortunately, there's also some incredibly horrible moments, such as the one we are going to talk about today. So unfortunately, it being Macabre, it's time to get into the historical cringies. Today, we are talking about the syphilis study that was conducted. We just dove into the background of the Tuskegee Institute for a reason. Well, because it's an amazing place in a lot of different ways, but it's also a very pivotal, important place for this study that was conducted, unfortunately. So how did it go down to begin with? Because where do you even begin with how you're going to find out how long it went on for and everything? It's not great. It was a project that was conducted by the U.S. Public Health Service, known as PHS. It began in 1932. Do you want to guess what year it ended?
Oh, I know it went on for a long time.
Yeah. Awfully long time. It went up all the way to 1972.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know that, like, the outcomes of it.
Yeah.
And that's why this is going to get really bad.
Yeah. It's awful. completely, like, I have a lot of words.
Yeah.
We won't get into all of that here. But
can't say all the, I mean, you could say all the words here, but.
Yeah. Yeah. We can.
We might on Patreon or something later.
Yeah. Or like rant at the end if we get really pissed. But yeah, it was something. So the project set out to learn about the natural course of untreated syphilis. So retrospect, but also really like common sense, there would have been other ways to go about researching untreated syphilis at this time, because when the study started in 1932, there wasn't a known treatment yet for syphilis. According to the documentation, the intention was to discover whether or not syphilis caused cardiovascular damage more than the neurological damage that was so oftenly reported with syphilis cases. As we talked about in our season one S's for Syphilis episode, we know that there were different stages, there were different components in how it attacked the body. There were people that went syphilitically insane. I mean, a big one that we can say right off the bat, Al Capone, towards the end there. But they wanted to see, you know, what it really did with the body, because they wanted to know how they could go forward with figuring out a cure. They also wanted to narrow down the research to just focus on African American men to see if it would affect them differently than white men. Let's pause here for a second and remember what time this was in. And this was, unfortunately, something that always was in question, if it affected people differently based on the color of their skin. Do I need to remind anybody that we have the same fucking organs and everything else? Moving up. Like I said, this is going to be a blood boiling episode. In the selected group that was chosen, researchers told them that they would be treated for, quote, bad blood. Now let's talk about that term for a second. What did it mean? It was actually a common term back in the day. Think about the things that we've talked about with really, really old past, with like the bad humors in the blood. We're going to do bloodletting to get the bad humors out of the blood. The term bad blood, basically the same thing. People were still in that frame of like, oh, well, you know, there's just some bad stuff in the blood and we'll have to figure out how to deal with it instead of coming up with something else. Because again, we had come a long way in medicine at that point, but not enough.
I want to know how they convinced people that they had bad blood to begin with.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to dive into that too. We're going to find out some pretty interesting things about these patients and how they convinced them even to do this and what happened and why they were okay with it. Because let me tell you, the truth wasn't being told. Let's just put it that way. But we know after talking about what bad blood was kind of a common term back at that time, what were they kind of talking about? Like, what did it mean to have bad blood? You know, how did you know? Okay, so the description for that term back in the day was anything, like a bunch of different ailments that you just didn't know exactly what it was. Like, kind of like today, when it's like, all right, I'm just having like a bad whatever, you know, and it could be a bunch of different symptoms, a bunch of different things. It's affecting your body in a different way. You just don't know what it is. So it kind of was an umbrella term for things that were untreated that they didn't know, but things like anemia, fatigue, syphilis, and many other things.
Achy joints.
Yep. Anything that was just, you know, that they were like, I'm not going to the doctor for this. I got bad blood, you know. Knowing that, PHS enlisted the help of the Tuskegee Institute to help them find people with, quote, bad blood. They were volunteers. And we're going to talk about why they were volunteers. I think that if they would have known the truth, they wouldn't have ever signed up for it to begin with.
For sure.
Yeah. It's really despicable. Like, oh, okay, we're going to get into that, though. There was a total of 600 men that enrolled in this study. 399 of them had syphilis, and 201 were control subjects. Many of them were impoverished and illiterate. Remember this for later when we talk about how and why and what, you know. A lot of them worked as sharecroppers. So if you don't know what a sharecropper is, it's a farmer who rents the land that they farm from somebody, like a landlord of sorts, and then they pay the landowner with parts of the harvest instead of for money. It was a poor community, and that's what a lot of people did there because that was how they could survive. I mean, people were really in dire straits, and when this came up, they thought that this might be an opportunity to really help out their families and help them out in general with life. Because when you hear about the incentives they were giving patients, I can understand why they wanted to try this out just as something, as a last-ditch effort. They were not told, though, that they had syphilis when they came in, regardless if they had it or not. And they definitely didn't know that the symptoms that they did have were sexually transmitted. That's very important to know now as we get into this other information. They were just vaguely told that they suffered from bad blood, which they kind of already knew. They're like, I feel awful. Like, I feel sick. Like, this is, you know, something to figure out and try to help me get better, you know? So
there's so much wrong with all of this already.
Oh, yeah. And it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
So that comes to our question, why did so many come forward to participate? Well, they were told that they were going to receive free medical exams, transportation to and from their clinic, meals on exam day were going to be free, free treatments for any of their ailments, any of them, top to bottom, head to toe, it was going to get covered, and that their loved ones would receive survivor's insurance if something were to happen in the time that they could partake in the study, which I think was assumed that it wasn't going to be because of their ailments, but maybe some did know, like, hey, I feel like I'm kind of at that point where I don't know I'm going to turn around from this. And because of that, they knew, like, hey, their burial costs were going to be covered. It was going to be less stress on their families too. So they were thinking about the future of their family, and it's just really sad. So this was an offer that a lot of them felt like they couldn't refuse because of how good it sounded. It seemed too good to be true. And you know what?
That old saying. Yeah, that old saying.
Yeah. They had documents to show for their agreement and to establish what they had said they were going to do with free examinations and transport and whatnot, which wasn't a lie to an extent. They just weren't giving the full truth, which if they would have looked on the other side of it, I don't think that any of them would have participated. They did have documents stating exactly what was agreed upon and exactly how experiments were going to go down. But unfortunately, the patients didn't know there were other things on the agreement because they were illiterate. Yes, this is why I told you to remember that. So since most of them didn't know how to read, and when they signed, they didn't see what was waiting for them after.
Oh,
yeah.
They would have no clue what they were even looking at. So
right.
It's like that makes it void and null to begin with.
Right. And this is also just like a public service announcement to be like, if you ever come across contracts or signing things that you need to sign for agreements, no matter what it is, make sure you read the whole fucking thing. And just read the
whole
thing.
Which most people never do, me included.
You should start.
Read that bullshit. Yeah.
you should start because it's not great sometimes.
We'll take your firstborn child.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know.
It's like, ooh, okay. Yeah.
We'll take your soul.
Yeah. Not good. As we mentioned before, when the experiment began, there wasn't a treatment for syphilis yet, you know, in 1932. And some of the first experimental treatments administered were, oh, you're going to be in the know now, and it's not going to surprise you, but things like mercury, arsenic, and bismuth, which bismuth is kind of, it's still used today in some products, but it's a chemical element used nowadays in a lot of department store products, like makeup and pharmaceuticals. And while small doses, it's not harmful to humans, how it was administered back then and the amounts really did mess up the human body. Anything over 15 grams in the system can cause side effects and lead to high toxicity levels, causing other things to break down in your body. So keep that in mind for going forward. It's not gonna get any better. It didn't stop there with experimental treatments involving administering weird things like that. When they realized that nothing was working, though, I mean, they were desperate. They were trying everything that they possibly could think of. They didn't just stop after the allotted time, which was, guess what? Only 6 to 9 months. Yeah, that was what they were allotted. And it didn't stop. They decided to follow the patients until their death, which is why it extended from 1932 to 1972. What's sickening is in 1947, penicillin became the standard treatment for syphilis. And it was becoming more well known in, you know, globally as something that could be the solution. The health officials conducting the study by this time did know this, if you were wondering.
That's why my question was going to be, like, why didn't it stop at that point? They just, at that point, were just like, let's just see what happens if we let this go on.
Yep.
That's a little bit longer. Now we want to see what happens when you don't treat it. Because we, you know, we've never had a study like this. We've never seen the implications of what happens when you don't treat it.
Right. And that's exactly where their brains were. Oh, yeah. They didn't give any patients penicillin. They didn't let anybody know in the studies that that was even a thing, that there was a treatment out there. Not a single one of them was given any sort of potential treatment that they knew for a fact would have helped. Why? Well, because they said it was part of the experiment. Like you said, that was where their brain was at, and they wanted to see it through from the beginning.
For science.
Yeah, for science.
For science.
In, like, the worst fucking way possible.
Yeah. Well, they probably looked at it like, well, the damage is done at this point because of the long-term.
Right.
You know, those long-term tertiary cases, like, you're not going to reverse the damage at this point. So let's just
keep
see how this plays out.
Right. Yeah. Which is unfortunate because it's like, you know, it may have helped at least alleviate some of the pain and
you know, the discomfort,
like, yes,
and also like stop the spread,
yes,
at that point
we're gonna get
we haven't even gotten there.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. It's like, and then the fact that, okay, it's bad through and through, but knowing in the beginning, like, hey, we are just really trying to find, you know, something that could treat this, it quickly evolved into, we're just going to see how it just affects people untreated. And it's like, really? Really? I don't know. I have a lot of words. The unofficial record states that over 100 of the patients in the test group died of tertiary syphilis. If you, again, kind of referencing our S episode in season one for S is for syphilis, you may remember that term. It's one of the stages of syphilis, and, you know, it goes in those levels if untreated. Well, the tertiary stage is the one you do not come back from. It's in your brain at that point, and it starts breaking it down.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, there's nothing, once you even touching that phase, you're fucked, basically. I mean, it's over.
Yeah. It's in your bones at that point. Like, yep. Evidence is in your bones.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. It's awful.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Where do we go from here? Knowing that they just kept going after knowing that penicillin came out. When did the secret really come out about this, and how long did they keep it hush hush? Well, this is more of the disgusting facts that we're getting into here. On July 25th of 1972, a story broke in the Associated Press in New York and the Washington Star in Washington about a 40-year-long experimental study conducted in the rural South of the U.S. on African American men. It wasn't just the patients that suffered for so many years, but also their wives and children, because as we know, the disease is sexually transmitted, but it can also be passed from mother to child during pregnancy childbirth.
Oh, yeah. Congenital.
Yep.
Syphilis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, the agony did not end, it just kept going. And when the news broke about this, there was an outrage that spread all across the world because it reached across the pond. This was a huge story. And the federal agencies conducting the experiments had then conducted a panel to initiate action into the investigation of what went down in Tuskegee, because apparently not everybody knew this was a thing in the government.
Are you surprised by this?
No. Yeah. I think sometimes we like to see the government as one like big body that just like knows all, but there's like different sects that have nothing to do with other sects that have no idea what's going on over here versus over there. Just chaos. Based on the reports that they found in the investigation, there was a lot that came out. A lot of stuff that was just too much to handle for the public in the beginning. A lot of stuff didn't come out right away because they had a lot of freaking work to do. Thanks, disgusting panel that studied this. So the following report that I'm going to share with you actually came from Tuskegee University itself. It says, quote, "While the panel concluded that the men participated in the study freely, agreeing to the examinations and treatments, there was evidence that scientific research protocol routinely applied to human subjects were either ignored or deeply flawed to ensure that the safety and well-being of the men involved. Specifically, the men were never told about or offered the research procedure called to inform consent fully. Researchers had not informed the men of the actual name of the study during their treatment, i.e., quote, Tuskegee study of untreated syphilis in the Negro male, end quote. Its purpose or potential consequences of the treatment or non-treatment that they would have received during the study. The men never knew of the debilitating and life-threatening consequences of the treatments they were receiving, and the impact on their wives, girlfriends, children they may have conceived once involved in the research. The panel also concluded that there was no choices given to the participants to quit the study when penicillin became available as a treatment and cure for syphilis. Reviewing the results of the research and panel concluded that the study was, quote, ethically unjustified, end quote. The panel articulated all the above findings in October of 1972, and then 1 month later, the Assistant Secretary of Health and Science Affairs officially declared the end of the Tuskegee study, end quote, from the statement given by Tuskegee University. Woof. That's a lot. And that's just like surface level conclusion of the investigation. I mean, oh man. So where did they go from there then at that point?
Yeah. What are the repercussions? That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you're going to be very.
No, probably happy. Not.
No.
Usually when you're dealing with the government type stuff, it's usually not a good outcome.
No.
No.
Well, yes, there were different areas in the government that were trying to get to the bottom of it. I will give them kudos in some sense, but could have been handled differently. Not going to lie. The following summer in 1973, an attorney named Gred.
This is a good blooper reel.
Oh, yeah, it is. Gred Frey was what I was going to say. His name is Fred Gray.
Gred Frey. Gred Frey better.
Right? Hey, Gred. Oh, this attorney, his name was Fred Gray. I got it right this time. He had Gred. We'll call him Gred from now on. No, just kidding.
Yeah, I like Gred.
Yeah, Gred. That's the last you'll hear, Gred. But he did file. He filed a class action suit against the federal government on behalf of the men that participated in the study and their families. So good on
Gred. Good on Gred.
Gred Fred. It was settled out of court for $10 million. Oh, of course. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
of course.
Because they wanted to keep it as hush-hush as possible, mm-hmm. you know. $10 million. That's what they got.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like enough for 600
and their families.
Participants. Uh-huh. Right. And their family. And like all the extended people. Like
right.
There were a lot more people when you look at it collectively exactly. that would have been
impacted. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I mean, 40 freaking years and you do that. That's what you settled out of court with. Cool. Just cool. That settlement actually was a year after the initial class action suit was, you know, filed. So in a case like this, with how severe it was, I think that went pretty quick. That should have been something that was prolonged a little bit longer. But if they settled out of court that quick, you know, there's other things going on. The same year, 1974, Congress passed the National Research Act, which might sound familiar to some of us today, with some other things that have come out with other things. We'll just leave it at that. This required institutional review boards to approve all studies that involved human beings going forward. Which, cool, good for that. But also, that didn't really stop things.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it solved the problem entirely.
No. We'll in the Macabre Morsel section, we're going to talk a teeny bit about that. So now we're going to jump from 1974 all the way to 1996. The Tuskegee Legacy Committee was established then, and the university documents the following excerpt, which I thought was important to include here. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the aftermath after what they did, because the committee did establish at least something to really make it public knowledge fully. So the excerpt says, quote, in February of 1994, at the Claude Moore Health Science Library in Charlottesville, Virginia, a symposium was held entitled, quote, Doing Bad in the Name of Good, the Tuskegee Syphilis Study and Its Legacy, end quote. Resulting from this gathering was the creation of the Tuskegee Syphilis Study Legacy Committee, which met for the very first time on January 18th and 19th, which is weird. We're recording on January 19th, so things are very on point here. Just wait until the Rasputin episode 2. We're on point today.
That's weird.
It is weird. It's chilling. So how many years ago in 1996 on this day? This is what was going down.
You know I can't do math, but 20-some?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't do math.
Yeah, almost 30. We're going on 28 years. Well, no. It's not 2024 anymore. 29 years! Yeah. The committee had two goals. One, to persuade President Clinton to apologize on behalf of the government for the atrocities of the study, and two, to develop a strategy to address the damages of the study to the psyche of African Americans and others about the ethical behavior of government-led research, rebuilding the reputation of Tuskegee through public education about the study, developing a clearinghouse on the ethics of scientific research, and scholarship and assembling training programs for healthcare providers, end quote. Which, good for them to establish that, knowing, you know, hey, this happened in our area. Like, we need to make this right. In 1997, 25 years after the experiment ended, which, how awful to say, because that's so recent, 65 years after the experiment began, President Bill Clinton issued an official apology for the study. He ended his speech on May 16th of that year saying, quote, "The United States government did something that was wrong, deeply, profoundly, morally wrong. It was an outrage to our commitment to integrity and equality for all our citizens, to the survivors, to the wives and family members, the children and the grandchildren. I say what you know. No power on earth can give you back the lives lost, the pain suffered, the years of internal torment and anguish. What was done cannot be undone, but we can end the silence. We can stop turning our heads away. We can look at you in the eye and finally say on behalf of the American people, what the United States government did was shameful, and I am sorry," end quote. So what was accomplished? Well, the Tuskegee Committee made that happen. Without them establishing that committee to get that in place to make things better, I don't think there would have been a national apology. The fact that their case and suit was settled out of court for a minimal amount of money, for how many people were impacted, to have it carry out that long, to finally get a stated apology from the president in the late 90s, that's like minimal that could have been done. You know what I mean? Do I think justice was served in this case? No. It sounds like to me that the people conducting the study, people from the PHS, were never truly held accountable. It was one big show of slap on the wrist and, hey, we're sorry. And that's what you got. And unfortunately, why don't we go into the morsels? What were you going to say?
And the whole time I'm thinking about the people that were directly involved.
Yes.
Right? How do you keep your mouth shut that whole time? How are there not whistleblowers? How are there people, like, because, you know, obviously, you know, it's that whole thing that goes back to, well, I'm not directly responsible because I'm doing what I'm told to do. Mm-hmm. That whole mentality of, like, you know, I'm just doing my job. This is for science. What were those people being told? Were those people being lied to? Like, let's unwrap that as well. Like,
exactly.
As a nurse, as a doctor, as a, you know, like, what about that? What about them? Like, how did they operate in silence for so many years?
Right. And that's a really good question. And I think that you're onto something. I don't necessarily think that everybody that was facilitating the study knew exactly what was happening until it was way, way too late. I think that absolutely some of the doctors that were facilitating knew exactly what was going on, but I don't think everybody did. That seems to be a theme with a lot of atrocities like this, where you go in levels of know-all to make sure that it goes through, because I truly believe, to give humanity the benefit of the doubt in some way, that not everybody would go through something like this. There is a prone drive to kind of take advantage of people who want to help, people who want to make a good difference, and they use that to their advantage.
I would be that person.
Me
right?
too.
And I can see that in an organizational structure too, because that is the thing. You limit the amount of information that's being distributed downward, right?
So right.
you tell Hallie to do her job. You're going to administer these tests. Let's say as a nurse, like you're checking BP, you're doing blood draws, you're doing this, you're giving this shot, you're doing that. You're charting and you're sending the patient on their way.
Yep.
You're tracking vitals, you're reporting, but you never see the other side of it. You report back to the person above you and so on and so forth. So yeah.
Right.
I suppose. But like, I think like.
To an extent,
like at some point, I'm also someone who looks for patterns and I look for like. I think my inquisitive mind would get the best of me. Like, what are we actually doing here? Why is this person not getting better? Why are they getting worse? Like, what are we doing here? You know?
Right.
So I think just curiosity would kill the cat in this case, because I am that person that wants to know things.
Same. So
someone would break in my house and strangle me in the middle of the night and I would just disappear. I'd be that person.
Right. I know. I feel like I'm in that same vein because, you know, at first blindly going in to be like, we're going to do the work. We're going to get it done. We're going to help as many people as we possibly can. And then know, okay, how long have we been at this?
Yeah, it's supposed to be 6 to 9 months.
Yes.
And now
and you keep seeing the same people and you're like, there's like really nothing is helping. Like, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know. We're not trying to defend in any way, but like just trying to look at it in a deeper level as well with like who knew what this
whole time.
Well,
hell yeah. You don't know. Like maybe the staff turned over every so many months.
That's a great point. Yeah. That could totally be the case too.
Maybe people got fired every so often or got moved to different locations to keep it.
Hush, hush.
Hush, hush.
Yeah. I could totally see that happening too.
So
we've seen that before in history.
It'd be very easy to keep that information quiet.
Mm-hmm.
If you're bringing in call it like it's at the university,
right?
Maybe it's people that are students.
Learning. Yeah, it could. Yeah. It maybe that was the case too. Maybe there were students learning how to administer vaccines and stuff like that, and they were trying to learn how to. And what if that was? Oh yeah, well,
and they're going through semesters at a time,
right?
So they're not really
right.
It's not like a stationary staff at a clinic.
Yeah,
yeah. So that does make sense to me now that I'm processing this.
Right, and
not
I
like
mean
the same staff for 40 years, you know?
Right, and maybe I mean some of them were for sure, but yeah, I'm hoping. In this case, that there was more turnover and that most of these people doing this really truly didn't know to try to give the benefit of the doubt. But either
one
way.
One can only hope.
Right. Either way, it was still so fucking disgusting that this happened. And this kind of brings us into macabre morsels, which I don't have a lot today because what I will tell you is going to be pretty impactful. It's going to be something that I think you're going to be chewing on for a little bit, and you should, because this stuff, unfortunately, this wasn't the only situation that America found itself in with unsavory studies. Let's just put it that way. So this, of course, we know, after talking about other things, is not the only horrific thing to happen based on what people are doing in America, government to their own citizens. And I'm not trying to be political here. I'm just stating the fact they have tested on American citizens, their own people. America, I'm not going to say that we're the only people. Other countries have done it. In fact, there are multiple, and they rank up from, scientific experiments all the way to different things that we won't get into in this episode. It's a pretty deep, deep topic that we may decide to cover something else later. But just look at Nazi Germany in World War II. We think that they were the only people that did stuff like this.
No.
No, they weren't.
MK we just, Ultra.
yeah. Unit 731, what we're going to cover which later.
Is coming up. Yep. Mm-hmm.
We love to just use World War II as examples for this when we really have to realize that, oh, honey, it was going on well before that and it's still going on today. It just looks a little bit different and they hide it a little bit differently now. Yeah. And that's across the world.
Better at hiding it.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, that's the morsel I'm leaving you on with.
We'll see you soon for episode U.
Yes, exactly. Be on the lookout for that. U is for Unit 731. I'm sorry, listeners. It was a rough one today for our hometown macabre. A little bit more on the serious, heated side of it. I know we've been doing a lot of that lately, but we promise we are bringing you some humor in the next one. So don't you worry. We got you. We need a little bit more humor. So it's going to get wild next. But before we let you go, if you have any stories you'd like to share with us, we would love to hear from you. And even if they're not stories, just say, hey, you can do that. Because guess what? We like to hang out with you. So we'd like to hear from you, too. With that being said, I just want to lay this little nugget on you. It's time to pick topics for the why episode, which means why is for you pick. So listeners, please submit what you would like to hear about. We're going to gather those topics and put them in little polls and have you vote on them because very soon, actually, sooner rather than later, we're going to be researching and recording that. So keep putting that on the Facebook group. Email us. You just get a hold of us. Let us know what you want us to cover for that episode. You can send those at any time to thatssomacabre@gmail.com. Get a hold of us through our website, macabrepod.com. And that's what I've got. Thank you for coming to hang out with us today for this blood-boiling edition of Macabre. We love you guys, even though we got a little there in the throughout today. We still love you. As always, we just love the shit out of you. So have fun. Be safe out there and be fucking kind. Because you know what? If we had more kindness going on, maybe a lot of this shit wouldn't be happening.
And read the fine print.
Yes, read the fine print before you fucking go to sign something also.
Especially if you're volunteering for some sort of medical experiment. Yeah.
You know. Or if you volunteer to do something for a study.
Yeah, studies specifically.
If you're not a patient, but kind of administering something or being part of that, just think again.
If you have an attorney friend, maybe have them review it for you and translate it to layman terms.
Yeah, especially if his name is Gred. Gred Frey. Frey. Oh, man. I can't believe it. I was doing so good. And then I just really, really shit the bucket.
When you fuck up, you do it right.
When it's like the Dos Equis guy. When I fuck up, I don't always fuck up, but when I do, it's so
hard. That's good.
Oh, all right.
Well,
until then, next time.
We'll shock you later.
Shock you later.
Bye.
Bye.
The time to do a strict thing in this world, ain't that?